thank you for downloading this podcast from Guymyr Baptist Church. You can find out more about our church at our website, guymyrbaptist.org.au. May God speak to you as you listen.
This evening's Bible reading is from Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through to 20. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained, hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed.
Thank you, Chandri, for that. That's fantastic. Good reading. Well, good evening, everybody. It's great to be with you once again. My name's Roxanne, or Roxy. Hi. Doesn't this look amazing, by the way? It's really distracting. It looks so good. Can we just because the team have put that together, and it's absolutely beautiful. I really love it. It reminds me that we're heading towards Christmas. And I was thinking about this great story in Mark's Gospel. As we start our We Are Not Alone series, is heading into Christmas. And I don't know about you, but the verse that we just read and all the scripture that we just read doesn't really scream Christmas to me. We've got the demon-possessed guy, we've got drowning pigs, we've got Jesus going over to the Decapolis, which is the 10 cities. For me, it seems a little bit more like something you might do at Halloween. It's like a little bit of a horror kind of feel. But Stay with me on this one, because I think we're going to get something out of it. So I just want to orientate you into where we are in Mark's Gospel. Jesus' ministry has got onto this cracking pace. This is chapter 5. Before this, he's done some healing, he's done some teaching. He's already cast one demon out of a guy way back in chapter 1. So he's got some, I guess, work experience there with the demon casting out. He's called his disciples, he's taught in parables. And then, just before this, you notice it might start, if you've got your Bibles there, it says they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. Or the Gerasenes, I don't know. Let's go across the lake. They go across there. But just before this, something happens. And let me just take you back to give you some perspective. Because just before this is a story that's really, really familiar. He's called his disciples, and he says to them, "Hey, disciples, let's get in this boat with some other boats, and let's cross over to the other side of the lake." So let's cross over. And over the other side of the lake, it's Gentile territory, it's the Decapolis, the 10 cities. Jesus is Jewish, his disciples are Jewish, they stick to the Jewish people. Gentile territory, it happens to be at night, which fishermen don't go out in boats at night, to a graveyard, which is very non-Jewish because dead things are unclean, and where there's pigs, which Jews don't eat because they're also unclean. This is really strange that Jesus has suggested this side quest. It's just strange. And on the way over there, Jesus falls asleep and a storm brews up and the disciples wake him up and they ask a question. And they say, "Don't you care if we drown?" And I guess in the story before this, Jesus does care because he gets up and tells the storm to basically beat it. And the storm settles down, everything's calm, and it's the famous calming of the storm that Jesus shows he has power over nature. And the disciples, not only have they now asked a question, "Don't you care if we drown?" they ask another question to each other. Who is this man? So what I want you to do is to remember those two questions the disciples have asked on their way across the lake. The two questions are, "Don't you care if we drown?" and "Who is this man? Who is this man?" Here we are, the section of scripture that we had read for us, and we land in the Gerasenes, and straight away up comes a demon-possessed man. Unfortunately, Mark, in his writing, presses pause on the action, and he gives us a bit of backstory. And I want to unpack that backstory a little bit because it says a lot about what this guy's experience is. So what I want us to do is to try and get into the perspective of this guy, try and get into his world. Imagine being him. What do we know? Well, he lived in the tombs. And when I think tombs, I think of Warrenora Cemetery up the road with manicured lawns and flowers, and they did tours there. And really, if you felt so inclined, you could take a picnic blanket and have yourself a picnic in our cemetery. It's that nice. But this is basically the opposite of that. Remember how I said Halloween, more Halloween than Christmas? Because what these were limestone caves set into a hillside where you would put dead bodies to rot and to decay, and you would just leave them there stinking. And once all the flesh had, whatever the flesh does, disappeared, they'd collect the bones and put them in a box. So it was a horrific, ghastly place. And this man is living there with the dead. I mean, he is literally the walking dead. It's a stinking, horrible place. And then Mark tells us that the people had bound him with hand and feet with chains, and they'd tried everything to try and restrain this guy. And as a matter of fact, they tried it so much that he couldn't even be bound anymore. That's how strong he was with this supernatural strength. He kept breaking the chains and the irons, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. And they tried a physical solution to what was really a spiritual problem, right? So he was doubly bound, physically and also spiritually. He could break the physical chains, but he had no power to defeat the spiritual realm. Walking dead, bound hand and foot with chains, no power whatsoever. And then Mark tells us that he would cry out, yell out, and take stones and cut himself, cut his flesh with stones. And he would do that day and night, like no rest, just on all the time, cutting. He just lived this tortured existence in this cemetery, in this tomb, and around the hills. And I don't know whether he was destroying himself or it was the demonic forces in him that were trying to kill him, but he was terrorized. It was hell on earth, quite literally. Now that, for us and for me, it's actually really hard to understand unless you've seen somebody who has actually been possessed by a demon. That supernatural strength, the self-destruction, et cetera, et cetera. So we might not have witnessed too much of that in our Christian walk, although it's out there. But something that's maybe a little bit more common that we might help understand what this guy's living is we might have witnessed people who've been isolated and removed from society because of their behaviour. Might be drug use, somebody who acts that way because they're using drugs, ICE, for example, or mental illness. I think of when I've seen ICE addicts on a complete bender, that strength they have, the ability, the unrestrained horror that they exhibit, or somebody with a serious mental break. In fact, this guy, the Talmud, the Jewish law, gives four characteristics of insanity. Running in the night, yep, we got that. Tearing your garments, yep, he's basically naked, shouty man. Nights in cemeteries, tick. And also destroying all your possessions. So he fits all the signs of insanity as well, but scripture is clear that insanity is not his problem. His problem is a spiritual problem. He's been possessed. And his solution is likewise spiritual. But fortunately for him, his solution has gotten into a boat on the other side of the river and sailed across the water at night through a storm, calmed the storm, and has arrived. Good news awaits for this man. Now, this man's a human, but he's acting like an animal, and he's bound like an animal and chained like an animal, and he's a complete and utter outcast, and he's a Gentile living amongst the dead. And when I try to imagine his situation, and I struggle to relate to this guy, because that's not my story. Like, I've never been, you know, possessed by a demon. I don't think I have. But I've never had that. I've not been on a serious drug or had a serious mental illness that would cause me to break things and to have supernatural strength. But I have felt isolated. And I have felt bound by things and chained by things. And I think maybe that's where we can see ourselves in this story. Because we might not be bound by chains around our ankles that we're breaking free of, but we might know what it's like to be trapped in a situation and not be able to get out of it. We might know what it's like to be stuck in shame and not be able to see a way forward through it. We might know what it's like to be in poverty and not be able to get through us. We might be bound or constricted by an addiction that is just oppressing our life, and we try to break it, whatever that addiction is, that thing we can't get out of. That might be where we relate to this guy. But there's a solution for that, just like there was for him. Another problem for this guy is he was so isolated. Like, he couldn't live in a town. He couldn't be with normal people, whatever they are. He couldn't do that whatsoever. And part of me thinks, well, I guess I felt isolated. I guess I felt different like this guy. Because for him, I mean, he was like that because he was possessed by a demon. But for us, some of us might look physically different from one another. Some of us might be socially awkward. We might not even know how to speak to people and talk to one another. Some of us might not have the right family background, and we might be isolated and set apart and different because of that. We might not feel we're clever enough, or we haven't gone to the right college, or we're at uni, or we haven't got the right mark at school, and we're different. But Jesus comes to us as well. And even tonight, for us, we can feel alone in a crowd. Loneliness is a massive problem in our world. Even as we grow more connected through social media, we're still so alone like this guy. We're still isolated from one another. And sometimes we do that by ourselves. We isolate ourselves because we think, if I'm over here, no one's going to know the real me. Because if they know the real me, well, that's not going to be good. If they know the real me, they might not like me. They might not think so well of me. I'm going to hide the real me over here, and I'm going to be isolated. And for some of us, we've been wounded. This guy cut himself with rocks and stones because I guess the demon made him do it. But for some of us, we've been cut not by rocks, but by words. We've been hurt by the things that people have spoken over us. We've been damaged by the things that people have said or the people have done to us. And some of us have hurt ourselves that way. Some of us, like this guy who was possessed and had voices probably in his head, some of our voices are damaging to ourselves. Some of us are listening to the voices that say, you're not good enough, no one likes you, go away, be by yourself, huddle down. Some of us are listening to those voices that repeat. And I just want to tell you that Jesus is coming to talk to you, because he's not content with leaving this possessed man here, and he's not content with leaving us in that place, because he's got a better word to speak to us tonight. So Jesus enters into this isolation of this guy. He sails to the other side. He's got the spiritual solution for the spiritual problem. He's got the words that are going to set this guy free, that is going to be out of his bonds, both physical and spiritual. And so let's go. So if you've got your Bible here, I want you to flick through to Mark chapter 5. If you have it there. If you don't, that's okay, because I'm going to read it out. First thing is, as soon as this guy sees Jesus at a distance, he runs and falls to his knees and he says these words, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God you won't torture me." I'm pressing pause. "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" Because I wonder if you remember the question that the disciples in the boat, after Jesus had calmed the storm, on the way over to this place, were asking one another. They're asking a question. Who is this man? Who is this man? No, the demons will tell you who he is. He's Jesus, Son of the Most High God. Swear to God you won't torture me. You know, in Mark's gospel, a lot of people that don't recognize Jesus, the Son of the Most High God. The people that are healed, man, I recognize him. Townsfolk, mm-mm. Those who should, the religious leaders, they don't recognize him at all. They got a vendetta against him. The disciples, I don't know. Who is this? Who's this guy we got into a boat in the middle of the night to cross the river? No one recognizes Jesus except for the demons. Only the demons recognize this guy. Just incredible. The demons know both who he is and what he has the power to do. And Jesus says this, "Come out of the man, you evil spirit." And he asks a question, "What is your name?" I wonder how long it's been since somebody asked this guy, "What's your name?" To see him for who he really is. But it's not the man who answers, it's the demons. And they answer legion, for we are many. Many can be anywhere from 2,000 to 6,000 in a Roman legion. Well, Jesus, as I said, he's cast out one demon before in chapter 1, so he's got some experience. So here's the legion. Is Jesus this powerful? Can he do it? Can he cast a legion of demons out of this guy? Is he really Jesus, the Son of the Most High God? Well, the demons know he is, and they beg him not to send them out of the area. This is interesting. There's three different categories of people in this little story that beg Jesus for something. And the demons are one of them. They beg him, "Don't send us out of the area. Send us into the pigs." Because they don't want to leave the area. They want to stay in that region so they can wreak havoc. And they say, "Go into the pigs." And Jesus gives them permission, of course, you know, great Sunday school story. They all rush down the riverbank and are drowned. Which is really interesting as well, that the pigs rush down into the steep bank and are drowned, because I wonder if you remember the other question that the disciples asked when they were in the boat on the way over to this place. They asked, "Who is this man?" We know who he is. He's Jesus, the Son of the Most High God. But they ask another question. They say, "Don't you care if we drown? Don't you care if we drown?" And Jesus says, "Well, I do care," and he calms the storm. So there is a drowning in this story. Isn't that interesting? There's a drowning in this story. It's not the disciples in the boat and Jesus. He saves them. It's not the demon-possessed man that the demons are trying to kill. Jesus is there to save him. But it is the pigs. And he does it to break the power of evil and darkness. And the pigs are the ones who drown. Not just saving the Jews, he's saving a Gentile outcast. Well, there goes the local economy, however. And so, because I'm imagining there was a lot of pork and bacon or something for the Gentile community in those 2,000 pigs, there goes the economy. And so now the townspeople come to see Jesus. And here is something really cool too, because they weren't scared of the demoniac before, but now they are. They're scared because they see the man sitting dressed and in his right mind. And so now they do some more, they do begging. So this is the second lot of begging that we have in this story. So the townspeople come and they start begging. "Please, Jesus, leave our region, please go away. And they are scared of the power that Jesus has. They're scared of what he does, and they ask him to leave their region. But this man's life has been utterly redeemed, utterly transformed. He has been taken from an outcast, an isolated guy with no hope, filled with demonic powers, and Jesus has done a complete reversal of this. And now, there's a third lot of begging. It's the healed man's turn to beg. And this is what he says. He says, take me with you. It's his turn to beg. And he says, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. And the word with him there, he wants to follow Jesus. And we've been using those words, follow Jesus, to follow Jesus, to follow after the Lord. And that's what this man is begging to do. His life has been turned around in such a way that he's gone from demon possession to just begging to be a disciple of Jesus. What a glow up, honestly. He's done a 180 on that. So he begs. And interestingly, Jesus has a really weird response. But let me pause there on the action as well, because I wonder if we beg to follow Jesus or whether we think it's optional. Do we beg and say, Jesus, let me follow you. I just want to follow after you. I want to be a disciple. Wherever you go, I'm going to be with you. Do we beg to follow Jesus? Or do we just think, eh? And I wonder if it's because of this guy's experience, so isolated and so alone and so filled with evil, and Jesus has transformed his life, that he wants to cling on to follow Jesus so closely. I don't know if you've had any friends who have come to know Jesus after a really rough time. I've had a few friends like that who've come to know Jesus late in life, and some people that have been on heroin and sleeping rough on the streets. And when their lives are transformed by the power and love of Jesus, it's such a dramatic turn that they cling on to the Lord and they know what they have found. They know the good thing they have found. And sometimes I think those who have been saved from great darkness cling more securely to the light. Yeah? So here's this man begging to follow Jesus. And the weird thing is Jesus says, no. No, which is really strange, because everywhere, everywhere Jesus has an answer for people after he heals them. Everywhere in this gospel, Mark heals people, they say, woohoo, I've been healed. And he says, shh, don't tell anyone. Do not tell anyone what I have done for you. People, person after person has to be told, don't spread the news, don't tell anyone. Except for this guy. This guy who begs to follow Jesus, and Jesus says, no, you can't come with me, but here's what you're going to do. He says, go home to your own people or your own family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. He's basically giving a mission. In fact, it's the first mission in the gospel to the Gentile world, to the Gentile community. He's been sent to the Gentiles, from demon-possessed to missionary. That's quite the glow-up, wouldn't you think? That's quite the turnaround. Wow. You know, that trip across the lake, through the storm and the calming of the storm and arriving, it wasn't a side quest for Jesus. It wasn't an also-ran. It wasn't a maybe we'll do this. It was like an incursion into enemy territory. It was like forming a beachhead of Jesus people in Gentile land, because God always had a plan to save the world, not just Israel, but to save the whole world through Jesus, both Jew and Gentile alike. And there's a theologian named, with the best name, for any theologian, Boring is his name. It's a great name for a theologian. And he says this story is not just about a response of faith and to power, although it is that, a response of faith to power, but it's an invasion of enemy territory and claiming it for the kingdom. And it's something that God always had planned, that God would save the Gentile world as well as the Jew. Now, I'm going to read a little passage from Isaiah 65 for you. And what I want you to do is to just tune in and listen and to see if you can pick up anything from this passage in Isaiah 65, which is talking about God's people and how he wants to gather them in from the world. See if you can pick up anything that's in this story. So Isaiah 65, 1-5. I'm going to just read parts of it. I revealed myself, says God, to those who did not ask for me. I was found by those who did not seek me. And he says his people are like this, the people he's trying to gather. They're like those who sit amongst the graves and spend their nights keeping vigil, who eat the flesh of pigs and who say, keep away, don't come near me, for I am too scared. Interesting, because there's a bunch of stuff in this passage which we read. Jesus reaching into the Gentile world. Those are the people he's reaching into. That's the guy that he's restored. There's nothing for Jesus that cannot be redeemed. Not a guy filled with a legion of demons who's a Gentile, who's living in a graveyard, who's surrounded by unclean pigs. It's always been God's plan to save the world. There's nothing that he can't restore into community. Now, what about us? Because this is true of us too. If this is true for the demon-possessed man, it's also true of us. Because Jesus not only crosses a lake for us, but he crossed through history and through eternity and came to be born as a man on this earth to restore us and redeem us. And our response, like this demon-possessed man, should be to beg Jesus, let me follow you. Let me be with you. And Jesus takes us from our isolation, our brokenness, and our bonds, and he breaks them with his supernatural power. And he brings us in. And like this man, he says, go to your family. Go to your family and tell them what God has done for you. Show them how he has had mercy on you. And that's our mission. God has taken us from broken people, and he's fixing us and moving us and putting us on mission. And we too are sent people. We need to learn to speak like this guy about what the Lord has done for us and how he's had mercy on us. And when we leave, Mark's always saying, look at the sign above the door that says, as the Father sent me, I am sending you, because that is our mission too. And we get to follow Jesus and we get to be like this guy who goes and tells his people and being restored into community, away from isolation, and gets to share the good news. We don't really hear much more of this, apart from the fact in verse 20, it says, the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis, the 10 cities of Gentile world, how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Now, we never hear of this guy. We don't know whether he started, you know, a tract society or whether he does some sort of, you know, I don't know, TV show. We need nothing about him, but we do know something which I find really interesting about this. The next time Jesus and the disciples go into this region, into the Decapolis, they're surrounded by so many people bringing their sick and they're unwell and bringing their people, and they surround Jesus so much that he has to miraculously feed them. And it's the feeding of the 4,000. 4,000 men plus women and children. And scholars wonder, well, how did they know? How did these 4,000 men plus women and children know about Jesus? And some of them wonder, was it this guy? Was it the demon-possessed man who'd been healed, who took what Jesus said seriously as a sent person, and who went to his family and went to his people and said, look what the Lord has done for me. He's broken the chains of bondage. He has set me free from the power of evil, and I'm whole and I'm healed. Here I am. And is that why so many people heard? could only have been word of mouth. They didn't have a tract printing society or a social media, you know, way to spread the word, but the word had spread. And I want to just say just two more things before we close up. And that is, some of us might be sent, like the formerly possessed man, into our family. Some of us, God might restore to our families and say to us, just share what the Lord has done for you. You have to make them believe, but that might be our task, is to be like this man and just to tell them what the Lord has done for you and how much mercy he had on you. And that might be how we are sent, how we fulfill the mission, how we participate in what God is doing, how we, as our sign says, are sent by Jesus. As the Father sent me, I'm sending you. That might be some of us. But for others, it might look a little different. Because at the end of this, I just want to swing right back to the disciples in the boat, where Jesus said, hey, let's go to the other side. Let's get in this boat and go to the other side at night to Gentile territory where there's demons and a graveyard and pigs and a storm. And I want to say that for some of us, we might be like the disciples, and Jesus might be calling us to cross to the other side. And for those disciples, it was not comfortable and it didn't look like it was going well. They thought they were going to drown. But they went with Jesus because he was with them. And for some of us, God might be actually calling us not to our safe family and friends, but to cross the lake, to go somewhere, to do something, to achieve something. That ministry thought that you've been burning in your heart, that business you want to start, that movement that you need to make, the thing you need to do, the ministry you need to step into. Some of you might feel uncomfortable about that. And I want to say Jesus is all right with being uncomfortable. Jesus is all right with that because he's with you and he can calm the storm and cast out demons. So we're good. We're sweet. So for some of us, that boat trip's not going the way we thought it was going to be. The trip across the lake, it's not going the way we thought it would be. But I want to say that God is with you. And if he's in this mission, then he's going to calm that storm and he's going to get you through the other side and he's going to do what he needs to do to save the world and to save you through it.